Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. It's great to have you with us today. I'm Joe Rathbanner, and today marks the 42nd anniversary of the Supreme Court's landmark ruling, Roe v. Wade, giving women a constitutional right to have an abortion up to the point of viability of the unborn outside the womb. During those 42 years, the National Right to Life Commission reports that 3,000 babies are aborted almost every day in the United States, and estimate that there have been over 56 million abortions in America since that decision in 1973. In fact, there is a bill on the floor right now expected to be passed by the House and possibly the Senate, which would ban abortion at 20 weeks or more. But if it does pass the House and Senate, it is expected to be vetoed by President Obama, which means that abortion is still a topic of discussion and an issue of concern for people on both sides of this issue, even 42 years later. So today I thought it might be appropriate to talk about today, to talk about why sometimes we would like to talk about this issue, but maybe we're afraid to. I did a little informational study of my own, asking my students how many have had conversations with their friend or acquaintance about abortion, how many have asked or been asked questions on the subject, and how willing are others or willing are they to engage? Well, 2 out of 42 students said that they would feel comfortable talking about their pro-life stance with someone who thought otherwise, which begs the question, why is that? Why are we reluctant to engage in discussions about our convictions? Well, I'm excited to hear from my guest today, Greg Kokel. Greg said he started out thinking that he was way too smart to become a Christian and ended up dedicating his life for the defense of the Christian faith. A central theme of Greg's speaking and writing is that Christianity can compete in the marketplace of ideas when it is properly understood and properly articulated, which brings us back to the abortion debate. Well, Greg holds master's degrees in both apologetics and philosophy. He serves as an adjunct professor in Christian apologetics at Biola University and has hosted his own radio talk show for over 25 years, advocating for clear-thinking Christianity and defending the Christian worldview. He's written some books that will likely come into the discussion today, including Tactics, a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair, and Precious Unborn Human Persons. Greg, it's great to have you on the show today.
Well, Jill, this is the place where I'm supposed to say I'm glad to be here, but isn't it a shame? Isn't it sad that in this day of sensitivity to human rights that we are still having to discuss this issue?
Yes, and that's why I was saying as we were chatting before the show, I just always get a little bit of a stomach ache as I'm thinking about this and reading the statistics of of how the decision that was made 42 years ago is affecting the unborn in our world, affecting women actually in our world, and to the negative as well as many of us. It's just, it hurts my heart very much. It does seem that people don't want to engage in a conversation about convictions that they hold near and dear to their heart. Why is that?
Yeah, well, I think it's a fear largely of getting caught crossways in a discussion, Joe. They don't know how to proceed. They don't have a game plan. And this, of course, is an emotionally volatile issue. And when people push back with what sounds like persuasive slogans, the pro-lifer just doesn't know where to go. And so they feel if they open their mouth and engage, they get into a fight, they look bad, they do more harm than good. So then why take that chance? And the irony is, and I know you've studied the issue a little bit with some of the Stand to Reason material, the irony is that we have such good responses to the kinds of what turn out to be really shallow rejoinders or points that people make in favor of abortion, that if we just knew what some of these were, and if we knew how to employ them in a diplomatic way, we could make a huge difference on this massive, mushy middle. That is, all these people that really are not deeply committed to pro-choice, but they are holding that view kind of by default because of the pressure from society, and they don't know any other good reasons to change their mind.
So what kind of pressure is that we seem to get from society? And I'm thinking you're talking about words like relativism and tolerance.
Well, that's a huge thing. I mean, the relativism issue is, look, you have your view, I have mine. You're welcome to yours. This is sometimes expressed in the phrase regarding abortion. If you don't like abortion, then don't have one. But that doesn't mean you have to tell other people they can't do what they think is okay. And so that's kind of a relativistic view, as if it's just a personalized choice. It's a matter of – it's like a flavor of ice cream or something. You like chocolate, I like vanilla. Why are you forcing your view on us? But when they say, if you don't like an abortion, don't have one, that isn't our view. Our view isn't that we don't like abortion and we want other people not to like what we don't like, which would be the same as forcing everybody to abandon vanilla if our preference was chocolate. No, it may even be that some pro-lifers in a very difficult situation may like the option of abortion for them. It's not that we don't like it. We think that abortion is wrong for very significant moral reasons, in the same way that slavery was wrong and is wrong. You wouldn't say to somebody, gee, you don't like slavery? Well, then don't own a slave.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a abolitionist heard that, they would say, wait, you're missing our point entirely. Our point is that human beings are the kinds of beings that should not be property of other human beings, regardless of who likes it. So there is this tendency to reduce moral claims to preference claims. Now, if a person is aware of that point that I've just made, if your listeners let that sink in, oh, that's really what's going on. They're changing this to an ice cream kind of claim, a preference claim. That isn't our view. Well, then we can think about how we might maneuver in the conversation tactically by using questions. And you mentioned the book earlier, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. This whole book is about how you maneuver as a good ambassador so your engagements look more like diplomacy than D-Day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we take a point, and then we try to find a question that we can ask. So if somebody says, well, if you don't like abortion, don't have one, then I might say, is it your view that my only complaint against abortion is that I just don't like it? Okay, well, now it's their turn to talk. And they can clarify. Well, no, I don't think – I think you have another reason. What do you think my other reasons are? Well, you think it's a human being, and we're killing a human being. Oh, okay. Well, then that makes it a totally different kind of discussion, doesn't it? Maybe we should talk about whether or not we're right on the question of it being a human being or not.
Well, in fact, you write that the issue of abortion is really not as complex as people make it out to be, but rather does boil down to that one question.
Yes.
What
yes,
is
yes.
the unborn?
Yes, that's it. And I'm, for the sake of significance here, let me underscore that and repeat it. To simplify, from a strategic perspective in these conversations, the first step is to simplify the issue. You know, you want to simplify the issue. And the way you simplify in this case is you can reduce the whole so-called complex issue of abortion to only one question. And that question, as you put it so nicely, Joe, is what is the unborn? What is the unborn? And I'm using the word unborn because it seems like a kind of a rhetorically neutral term. You can call it a fetus, you can call it a zygote, but all of these things sometimes, a piece of tissue, well, these kind of are dismissive. Or you call it a baby, and then that seems rhetorically in the other direction. So let's just be neutral. Whatever that thing is, what is it, is the question. And here's a statement that I think captures the significance, the strategic significance of that question. If the unborn is not a real human being, then no justification for abortion is necessary. If it's just a piece of tissue, you don't need to talk about the inconvenience of or the financial hardship, or I have a right to choice, or I have a right to privacy. When you go get your tooth pulled, it's not a big deal. You don't make – just go ahead and do it. And if that's just a piece of tissue that is part of the mother's body, well, then just remove it. If it's not a real human being, then there's no justification is necessary. However, if the unborn is a human being, if it turns out that what it actually is a human being, well, then it seems like no justification for elective abortion is adequate, because we don't kill innocent, defenseless human beings for the reasons that people give for abortion. And whether it's financial hardship or choice or privacy or all of those things, we don't allow that. I abuse my child, but I have a right to privacy and I have a right to choice. You know, no one would countenance such a thing. So this shows that the critical question is what is the unborn, and that's the kind of thing that people don't talk about, generally speaking. But that is the central issue. And let me quickly give you an illustration that can be used by your listeners. And this is a way of kind of entering into the conversation in a smooth way without creating difficulty. But it's a way of asking a kind of question that that introduces the topic without starting trouble. Okay.
Okay.
And focuses on this strategic point: what is the unborn? And here it is. And so I'd say to the person, imagine that you're at home and you're working at your desk, or you're working at your computer, or you're doing dishes, or you're working at some project in the shop or whatever, and your child comes up behind you. Well, you can't see them, but you know they're there because they ask you a question. And they say to you, "Mommy, Daddy, can I kill this?" Now, you can't see them, obviously, for the sake of the illustration. So what is the first question you must have answered before you can answer the question, "Can I kill this?"
What is it?
What is it? What is it? Is this a cockroach? Is this a spider? You know, is this your brother's gerbil? Is it the house puppy? Is it the kid down the street that made you angry? You see, you have to answer the question what it is first before you know it's right or wrong to kill the thing. And an abortion kills something. Something. That's the point. Nobody knows when life begins. Baloney. It's growing. Is it growing? You can ask that question. Somebody says nobody knows when life begins. Well, wait a minute. Is it growing? Yes. Then it's alive. No mystery there. Absolutely no mystery. If it's growing, it's alive. And so it's a living thing then. Now, in order to know whether it's right or wrong to take that life, we have to ask the question, what is it? And if you can get to that point, you frame the debate in a proper way with a genial illustration that invites the other person into the conversation and gets them to make a commitment to something obvious. Before you can know whether it's right or wrong to kill it, you have to know what it is. And so now you're at the point where you're focusing on what's important. What is it? Not personal bodily rights, not choice, not finances, nothing. What is it? And then you go from there.
Talking to Greg Kokol today, he is the author of a book called Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, and also the author of Precious Unborn Human Persons. On this week anniversary of Roe versus Wade, 42 years ago when that decision was made, we're talking about abortion and how we can have a conversation with people who may or may not share the view that you have. How do we have those conversations? We're getting some tactics of our own. We're going to talk more about that when we come back with Greg. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Well, today I am very honored to have on Greg Kokel. He is the founder and president of Stand to Reason, which is an organization dedicated to helping Christians diplomatically defend their faith. And one of the issues we are talking about today, because it is the week anniversary, the 42nd anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision, we are talking about abortion. And if you hold to a pro-life stance, you'll be very interested in what he has to say, because he's giving some ideas and some tactics on how to have a conversation with someone who may hold a different view than you might. And we were talking, Greg, earlier that the main question that we have to get to is, what in the world is the unborn? And that we
right.
start and springboard the conversation from that. Why
yeah.
is that question so important?
Well, because everything hinges on that, and as I mentioned earlier, if the unborn is not a human being, a genuine human being, well, I don't know why we need to get into these discussions about choice and privacy and financial hardship. Those are just irrelevant. Go ahead and have the abortion, whatever. You know, it's like appendicitis. You got an appendix, get rid of it. You know, if you don't want it, tonsils, take them out. Toothache. Pull it, whatever. Who cares? We don't make a federal case about that because these are inconsequential things, when it gets right down to it. However, if it turns out the unborn is a human being, well, that changes everything. I mean, if you have a building, and let's say you don't even know, you're not sure. If you have a building that you're about to destroy because it's old and you want to put up a new hotel or something like that, before they push the plunger to blow the thing up, they always ask an important question. Is anybody in there? Mm. And if somebody says, I don't know, well, they don't go forward with it because too much is at stake. They determine for sure that nobody could possibly be in harm's way when they blow this building up, okay? And so there's a common sense insight there, and that insight is that human beings, genuine human beings, are the kinds of beings that deserve our protection, regardless of whether they're really small, regardless of whether people want them, regardless of whether there's a hardship associated with them. Let's face it, if you have children, you know, kids are hard, you know. So there's always hardship associated with children. And so all we're doing here when we start the discussion is trade on a very common notion that virtually everyone is going to have to at least acknowledge the sensibility of. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to change their mind, but what we're trying to do is get on the track by simplifying the issue and getting rid of a lot of the red herrings and the distractions that get involved in this conversation, and also give a starting point to your pro-life listeners who might be a little bit nervous about, how do I get into this? Here's a simple way. Mm. Let me ask you a question. Notice at every point, Joe, I am trying to make my point using questions. So when I ask a question, then why are we, you know, taking a chance of destroying a real human being when even on your own admission, it might be a human? Now the ball's in their court. I want them to answer for that. Mm. I want them to work through this themselves. Because the pro-life view is a morally common sense position. It is a morally common sense view. And maybe it might be helpful at this point for me to underline the basic logic of the pro-life view, which logic, by the way, a whole bunch of pro-lifers don't get clearly in their mind. And even people who are pro-life politicians don't have clearly in their mind. And I do not understand how they can defend the pro-life view effectively, though I'm glad they're trying, if they don't get this pro-life logic. Okay, here it is. It's very simple. It is wrong. Here's the two premises and a conclusion. First premise, it is wrong to take the life of an innocent human being. Now, that doesn't strike me as that controversial.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Secondly, abortion takes the life of an innocent human being. Now, that might be a little controversial. We'll get to that in a minute. That's the what is it question, right?
Right.
Conclusion, abortion is wrong. Now, anybody can see that if the first statement or premise is true, that It's wrong to take the life of any innocent human being. And the second statement is true. Abortion takes the life of an innocent human being. Then the conclusion follows of necessity. You can't get away from it. So what somebody has to do to show that this logic doesn't go through, and pardon me for putting it in so like such philosophical terminology, but I think it actually simplifies things. If somebody wants to show that this conclusion doesn't really follow or doesn't go through, he's got to show that one of the two premises is false, mm-hmm. that it's not wrong to kill innocent human being, or abortion doesn't kill an innocent human being. And so a lot of times the focus then is on that second point. But this is not hard to demonstrate, because the thing that's inside mom is not mom. Mm-hmm. It's inside mom. Her body's involved, but it's not her body. And after CSI, everybody should get this right.
Right. After many scientific studies and approaches, we know that that is not right.
Yeah. Well, you know, you find a piece of tissue at a crime scene. What do they do? DNA analysis. Mm-hmm. Whose body does this belong to? And then they match it up with the criminal, right? But when you do a DNA analysis on whatever that is that's growing inside of mom, guess what? It doesn't match mom. It doesn't match mom. That thing growing in there has a separate DNA fingerprint. All right. However, it is something about the DNA that tells you something about that. And that is, it's got a human fingerprint. I'm sorry, a human signature. It is the DNA from human tissue. But it is not the tissue of the mom. It is separate. It is a separate living, growing being of the humankind inside a mom. And of course, we all know this, don't we?
Hmm.
So, because when your cat is pregnant, right? You don't expect puppies to come out.
No.
Right? And when mom's pregnant, there isn't all this mystery. Gee, I wonder what it's going to be, you know. And then when she has her fifth child and it turns out to be a human being, nobody says, oh, my gosh, five in a row, human beings. What are the chances, you know? No, of course, we know that like begets like. When mom and dad reproduce, they reproduce another being just like themselves. And so the thing growing inside mom is a separate individual human being, regardless of the size or the shape or what it looks like at any given time. It is a separate individual human being. And that's science. Okay, that is just science. And it's irrefutable science. So the second premise, the second point of our argument is pretty straightforward. And indeed, most people get this. Women talk about their baby, you know, their child before the baby is born. They know this unless they want to get rid of it and then they dehumanize it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in these discussions. So what I've offered now is just a way of arguing the logic of the pro-life view and a way of affirming what it's the most controversial statement. What is it? It's a living, distinct human being. And that's obvious just by looking at the DNA. And it's also, we already know this anyway. So we've actually solved the problem there. And notice the way I did it, I'm role-playing it with these rhetorical questions. But when I'm talking with somebody, they're not going to just be rhetorical. In other words, I'm not just going to ask them and answer them myself. I'm going to ask them and let the other person answer. Because the answers are obvious. And I want the answers on the table, because every time they put an answer on the table, that commits them more to my view, mm-hmm. or at least the facts that support my view.
Talking to Greg Kogel today, talking, really getting some tactics on how to have conversations that we seem to be kind of intimidated with, but he's giving us some great ideas on how to start those questions, start those conversations, what questions we should be asking. And when we come back from our break, we'll have some more conversation with Greg Kogel about what it is that we can talk to, what it is that we can bring up to people who may have a pro-choice position on abortion to really get that conversation started, not to be intimidated, but to really be excited to have this kind of conversation. We will be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Well, this week marks the 42nd anniversary of the passing of Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision by the Supreme Court to allow abortion on demand. Since then, over 56 million abortions are estimated to have occurred here in the United States. It is something that affects all of us, and yet it seems that many don't feel like they have adequate knowledge or information on how to defend a pro-life position. Well, you're in luck today because I'm talking with Greg Kokel about ways to engage in conversation diplomatically and effectively while communicating your position. So, Greg, you tell a story in your book, Tactics, about a conversation you had with a sales clerk about abortion, of all things. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, this was actually up in broadly your neck of the woods, mm-hmm. literally speaking. It was just a little east of you in Wisconsin. It was my Witch in Wisconsin conversation. And she was sporting a large pentagram around her neck, a five-pointed star, which is often an occultic symbol. And I asked her about that, and she acknowledged, yes, she's a pagan. And I what I asked is, does that jewelry have religious significance to you? So that was the question that started the conversation. I took an interest in her, so there's no defenses up. She said, yes, I'm a pagan, and we respect all life. And I said, you must, are you Wiccan then? She said, yes. And that's when she said, we respect all life, which respect of life is a basic theological tenet of Wicca. And so So I said, well, then if you respect all life, that would probably make you pro-life with regards to the abortion question. And she said, no, I'm actually pro-choice. And I said, isn't that a little surprising that a witch is pro-choice? Because my understanding actually is that most witches are pro-life because they respect life. She said, well, it is. And then she says this, and she said, I know I could never do that. Speaking of abortion, I could never have an abortion. I could never kill a baby. Now, what's curious about this is she's the one now who's using the baby killing language to support, to describe an action she actually supports, at least personally, even though it's inconsistent with her own theology. So now I'm paying attention, of course, to the conversation. I pick this up, and I guess it's free to use the baby killing language here because she's using it. She says, I wouldn't want something bad to come back on me, like a what goes around comes around kind of thing. You know, if I kill a baby, then something bad's going to happen to me. And I said, well, wait, maybe you wouldn't kill babies, but maybe we should keep other people from killing babies. And she said, well, I think people should have a choice. Now, what is the choice that we are explicitly discussing here? It's the choice to kill babies by your own admission, you know. And again, I'm not getting uptight here. There's no tension, pardon me, in this conversation at all. There's we're just moving along. But notice I'm asking questions following the comments she's making. So the comments are suggesting more questions to lead her, hopefully, to a point where she can see the foolishness of her view. So she said people should have a choice. When I said maybe we should stop other people from killing babies, and I said, you mean people should have a choice to kill babies? And she said, well, I think all things should be taken into consideration. And I said, okay, tell me what you think would be a legitimate consideration to make it okay to kill a baby. And she immediately said incest. Now, of course, all she's doing is trotting out these pro-choice slogans, but the problem for her is she has already identified abortion as baby killing. So all of these pro-choice slogans that sound so well, so good in other circumstances now sound odd because they are slogans that are explicitly supporting baby killing. But she's not paying attention. She's just doing the sloganizing. So finally, I asked her this. I said, let me see if I understand you correctly. If I had a two-year-old standing next to me who had been conceived by incest, then on your view, I should be allowed to kill this baby. Is that correct?
Hmm.
Now, we call this trotting out the toddler. In other words, we're going to use a born child to see if the same principles that people are using to kill the unborn will apply to the born. Okay, that's all that is. Because I don't think there's any relevant difference in location. You know, if they're somewhere, just because one's inside the woman, one outside, I don't see why location should matter. So now she stops. And now she's thinking about it. And finally she says, because obviously she can't say, okay, kill the two-year-old. This would be bizarre, which is what I'm trying to get her to see with the questions. And finally she says, I'd have mixed feelings about that, you know, about killing the two-year-old. And that, I mean, I chuckle. I'm thinking to myself, well, I hope they'd at least be mixed feelings. But keep in mind, she's making a concession. You know, she's thinking, well, you kind of got a point there. I'll have to think about it. And that was all I was after in that conversation. I just wanted to get her to think about it. I wanted to put a stone in her shoe. I wanted to annoy her in a good way. And hopefully this would get her moving in a good direction, get her to doubt her own conviction a little bit with a series of questions that were well placed.
So, Greg, of course, there's no explicit mention of abortion in the Bible, but right. From the beginning to the end of Scripture, there's certainly an emphasis on the sanctity of human life. If someone right. says, well, I am a Christ follower, what am I supposed to believe about abortion? Where do you start there?
Well, the Ten Commandments make it clear that it's wrong for us to murder, and murdering is taking an innocent human life without proper justification. Now, you're right in saying that there seems to be no explicit reference in the Scriptures to abortion, though the Jews had a clear understanding of what the application of the Old Testament teaching was, and that it excluded abortion. But I have been unhappy with some of the passages from the Old Testament, maybe Psalms and poetic literature, that have been used to support the pro-life view. I think they're weak, frankly. If the Scripture teaches that it's wrong to take an innocent human life, then we need to go somewhere that explicitly indicates that that the unborn is a bona fide human being. So let's go to the birth narratives in the Gospels, specifically Luke chapter 1. In Luke chapter 1, first you have an angel appears to Zacharias, who is John the Baptist's father, and predicts that his wife will have, Elizabeth, will have a child. Okay? Verse 15, Luke 1, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord, and he will drink no wine or liquor, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit while yet in his mother's womb. Now, who would that be? That won't be a potential John the Baptist that is filled with the Spirit. That's going to be him himself, regardless of whether he's been named yet. It's that person, the prophet, the great prophet, the forerunner. He is himself inside his mother's womb. This is the clear implication of this passage. And when you flip the page, after Mary is now carrying Jesus, and Mary is there visiting, goes to visit Elizabeth, Mary greets Elizabeth, and verse 41, when Elizabeth hears Mary's greeting, the baby leaps in her womb. And Elizabeth was filled with the Spirit. So this is the fulfillment of the prophecy a few verses back. Notice the characterization. The baby leaped in her womb, okay? And she cried out with a loud voice, blessed among you are among women are you, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. How is it that the mother of my Lord should come to me? Now, where is the Lord that she's mother of? It's inside her womb. For behold, when the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby leaped in my womb for joy. Now, I don't know how any Christian who respects the authority of Scripture and who can read cannot see the clear implication of this passage for the question of abortion. And here it's end of her 6 month is when this happens with Elizabeth, but it's Mary is just recently conceived. Because Elizabeth is already in her 6 month, the angel tells Mary, when he announces that she will conceive.
So there's also even putting a time frame on that for those who may argue time frame or geography and time frame.
That's right. So we have excellent philosophical arguments and medical or scientific arguments that we can offer for those not interested in the Bible. But if you're a follower of Christ and you acknowledge the authority of Scripture, I don't see how you could be pro-choice. Mm. Given this statement, because this makes it clear that abortion kills an innocent human being, and the Ten Commandments says don't do that. So there is a powerful biblical case, in my view.
Well, talk us through the question that we may get sometimes from people who are pro-life that say, well, the baby is not developed. I mean, you can take a baby at any stage until it comes out. And it's not killing. How do you answer that question?
Yeah, this would be a pro-choice argument, and the question would be: there is why is level of development relevant? Why is level of development relevant to the valuable humanity of the child? Mm. Okay, so that's the question I'm going to throw back. They're assuming it is. The child isn't developed, therefore I can kill the child. Well, the child develops from the zygote stage until that human dies. All right? There is no magic that happens when it passes 7 inches down a birth canal that changes it from a tissue mass to a valuable human being. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I had my babies by C-section, so they never even went through the birth canal.
There you go. So, you know, and so
I think they're real. They're 9 and 12.
Yeah, well, so did some magic happen when you were opened up and all of a sudden, boom. No, the development thing is irrelevant. It's clearly irrelevant look at it, a child who is newly born has all kinds of capacities that are not yet realized. You know, there are things that can't talk. They make noise, but they don't talk. They don't have the mental capacities developed well enough to begin to hear and manage the language thing and begin to form words. My point is there is development inside of the womb, and that development continues on outside of the womb. Some people will say, look, the unborn doesn't look like a human being. And my response is, sure it does. It looks exactly like every human being looks at that stage of development. Mm. You know, there are periods of your life in which you look nothing like you look at other periods of your life. I was going through TSA at the airport a couple years back, and then you got to give me your driver's license, and they look at my license and they look at me. Then they look back at my license and they look at me again. And this happened a number of times. The guy said, "What happened?"
Oh, no.
And, of course, I needed my license renewed. But I said, hey, I'll tell you what happened. 10 years happened. That's what. And you look at your high school graduation pictures, and then you look at your pictures in middle age, you know, and that's kind of a joke because, why? Look at that. Or your kid pictures. We are always changing. This is the nature of being human, of any biological development. We should not be surprised that you look different when you're thirty than when you're 90, or that you look different when you're 10 than when you're 30, or that you're 1 than you're 10, or that you're 1 month gestation compared to a newborn. This is exactly the way it always works with everyone. However, the individual that is changing doesn't change. So let me just say that again. The individual that is changing doesn't change. And this is clear when you ask a simple question. Were you ever an unborn child? Mm. It doesn't make sense to say we used to be an egg or a sperm, but does it make sense to say that you were the child your mother carried? Were you the one sitting on her kidney and kicking her ribs and doing the somersault? Mm. Was that you? Or was that someone else? Or was that something else? Or was that just a potential you? Mm. Because if that was you, then abortion by your mom would have killed you, not a potential you. It wouldn't have just cut off a possible future history. It would have destroyed a human being who would have had that history. Now what I've offered, Joe, really is just very commonsensical notions. But I'm offering ways of stating these notions, especially by using questions to draw the common sense notion out of the other person to be able to lay a foundation to support my basic premises that abortion, it's wrong to kill an innocent human being, and the unborn is an example of an innocent human being. And, you know, any of the ways that people are using to try to disqualify this as a genuine bona fide human being, wrong location, not properly developed, sometimes they use the word person at this point, but wrong location, not properly developed, not old enough, doesn't have the same abilities, the wrong size, none of these work. In fact, there's an acronym people can use that is really an excellent one. It comes from Stephen Schwartz, and it's a great way of summing up the kinds of things people say to disqualify the unborn, and that is the SLED acronym, S-L-E-D. And it stands for size, level of development, that's the L, environment, and that's where you are, whether you're in the womb or outside of the womb, and degree of dependency. That's the D, S-L-E-D, size, level of development, environment, or degree of dependency. And so size would be the way you look. Level of development is what you could do. Environment would be where you are. And then finally, degree of dependency goes back to that Roe v. Wade comment that you made earlier, whether they can survive outside of the womb or not. I mean, the fact is, no child can survive on its own outside of the womb. Some people have teenagers that can't survive still outside of the womb. Some women have husbands that can't survive yet on their own outside. So that SLED is a way of summarizing all of these ways that people have used to try to dismiss the force of that first premise that it's wrong to kill an innocent human being. They say, well, this is maybe a human but not a person. That's the real issue here. Nonsense. Nonsense. That isn't going to work.
We're talking to Greg Kokel today. Fascinating discussion on how we can have a discussion about abortion and how we can maybe defend the way that we feel about it, the way that we know that God would like us to feel about it as well. We are going to get back with some more tactics from Greg Kokel and also give you some resources on how to find out more about this in case you are willing to and ready to and feel ready to engage in a conversation of your own. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Well, do you ever find yourself wanting to engage in a discussion about abortion or offer a defense for your pro-life position, but you're not quite sure how to do so? Well, today we're talking tactics with author Greg Kokel, who has been talking about tactics and how to have these conversations for quite a long time. He is founder and president of Stand to Reason, an organization that's dedicated to helping Christians diplomatically defend their faith, and has a radio talk show that he has had for how many years, Greg?
Well, actually, I got to update the Vita there because I'm having my 25th anniversary in about 2 weeks. So I've kind of been behind the mic for a long time. Fortunately, it's only been 3 to 6 hours a week, and but not like every day, like a lot of folk. But so I've had a chance to use this wonderful medium to make a difference for Christ.
Well, and how I listened to that on podcast. How would people be able to get some of those resources that we've been talking about that you've been referencing throughout the show if they want to learn more about this?
Yeah, well, the podcast is one of the best things they can do because I cover so many issues and I employ the tactical plan that I discuss in the book and that I've been referring to here. So that's only three hours a week, which is, one L.A. commute. So it's not burdensome. And they can get the podcast from either our website, str.org, or they can go to iTunes and get it there under Stand to Reason. Also, I would suggest that they go to our website and they sign up for our free training material, and we can send this to them digitally. It's a newsletter that every other month called Solid Ground that we send out. It's a 3,000 to 3,500 word article. It's, again, not burdensome. You're not going to find pictures of our staff at bake sales in our newsletter. You're going to get an article that really will help you maneuver in issues in the culture. And I've written quite a few on the abortion question, and they're on file on our website at str.org. faith.org. You'll also receive the alternating months a mentoring letter from me, which is one page to help you be a better ambassador for Christ. So I want to mentor those that are part of our constituency. The books you mentioned are all available at our website and also at other sources on the web. The Tactics book, the Precious Unborn Human Persons, which is actually a much smaller book that goes into a lot of this detail as well. You can also find the Relativism book there, and there, I think I have actually six titles on our website that people might draw from. So it's all available, and I really encourage them to take the step and get some more training on this. We actually have a training tool called Making Abortion Unthinkable, The Art of Pro-Life Persuasion. That is a group training tool, and a lot of crisis pregnancy centers have used to help train their people. So there's a lot of particulars there, a lot of details, a lot of resources that people can use at their leisure to get them more up to speed to make a defense for the unborn.
Excellent. We will have a link to Greg's website as well on our website at myfaithradio.com. So you can just click on Connecting Faith, and we'll have that resource available to you. And we also have an author page of Greg on our website as well, so you'll be able to have access to those resources.
Hey, Joe, let me just make an observation about a comment you made at the beginning of the show.
Sure.
And you mentioned the numbers. You said 3,000 a day, 56 million over the 42 years. And those are accurate statistics as far as I know also. I just want to make an observation because it's easy for numbers to be lost. Mm-hmm. On September 11th, 2001, 2,977 people lost their lives on American soil during a terrorist attack. And Time magazine called it the bloodiest day on American soil since the Civil War. But actually, mm-hmm. Time magazine was wrong, because more than that die on American soil every single day, day after day, year after year, now 42 years running because of elective abortion. So I want your listeners to think about 9/11 and the devastating impact that had when we consider the loss of life, and to remind themselves that that has been happening every single day for 42 years through abortion.
Hmm.
Puts it in perspective, doesn't it?
It does. It gives me a bit of a stomach ache there to have to think about that. But also, sometimes I've noticed that when my heart jumps a little bit and I just think that is awful, that is really God's way of indicating to me that I need to take some action.
Yeah,
and so
that's right.
I love that this show today is about giving us an opportunity to say, I want to be able to have these conversations in a way that doesn't necessarily cause an argument, but in a way that the phrase that you like to use is put a stone in their shoe, I think.
Exactly. Exactly right. That's right.
And,
we don't have to cover all of the ground in every conversation. We don't have to go for the gold or swing for the fences or get them to sign on the dotted line. For most people, when it comes to spiritual or moral issues that are weighty, it takes them time to work through issues. And so what we're going to do is we're not going to worry about harvesting. We're just going to do a little gardening here. Hmm. And we're to shift the metaphor now. We're going to try to cultivate things and give them something to think about. And what might encourage your callers and your listeners, rather, is that we have a huge, as I mentioned before, mushy middle. You have a lot of people that are persuadable, but they have never, ever heard a coherent, thoughtful, persuasive characterization of the pro-life view. And I've tried to provide bits of that here. And the material we have at Stand to Reason, we have a number of printed materials that relate to the pro-life view, do that. And we have had people that have given debates using our material on a high school level or college level or whatever. And the teacher, who is pro-choice, is stunned. And the teacher has said, I have never, ever heard anything like this before. Mm. And invariably, they win the debate in that they are graded to have done better in the debate than the others. And sometimes the other side has even changed their view in light of these facts. So people are persuadable on this particular point.
Well, and one of the things that you also talk about in your book that I try to talk to my students about in my Christian worldview class is you need to be able to articulate why you believe what you believe. We're asking other people to do that. You also need to be able to do that. And that simply takes sitting down and thinking about why you believe what you believe.
Uh-huh.
So that when we are asked that question, we can actually give an answer.
Yeah, and for that, stand to reason is at their service.
Mm. Well, you have a lot of great resources on your website, and I just highly endorse that, of course. I've used it in some of my own research and also in my teaching as well. So if you're listening today and you can go online and get some more resources or you want to know more, then you can click on that link on our website and you can get more on Greg's information. Thanks so much, Greg, for joining us on this very important day, this very important week. Not that they're all not very important, but just on this anniversary of Roe versus Wade, it's good to be talking about these things.
Well, it's been a real pleasure for me, Joe. I hope we can do it again sometime.
I hope we can, too. Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith.